Okay. This evening, recently someone, she spoke to me, and she asked me to give a talk about the topics on resentment and acceptance of one's defilements, because she's recently, she discovered herself has lots of resentment, like when she be able to see her defilements, but she find it very difficult to accept it. And that's very strong, you know, resentment that refuse to accept that, you know, that I have this defilement. And she said, how am I going to deal with that, you know, that very strong resentment. So then the first thing I told her is that, you know, the fact that you be able to see that is already wonderful, isn't it? How many people be able to see their own defilements? It's difficult to see because it's so close. You can't see, isn't it? So of course, first of all, I like to talk about resentment. So actually, the resentment actually is indicate, you know, that the sense of self. If you have very strong resentment, that means the indication of your sense of self very strong. You know, whenever our sense of self, you know, our self-interest being challenged, you know, like things that not according to what we want it to be, like things happen, or we have an idea of who we are, who we should be, and then when we discover that, okay, this, you know, I'm not the one that I think that, you know, I'm such a wonderful person, I'm so good, but I can see that I have all this self, I can see my own selfishness and all, you know. And you find it very difficult to accept because you believe, you know, you have this view, you know, you develop a very strong and solid and concrete views of yourself, who you are. And sometimes it becomes so solid and so concrete to accept that you are not. And this comes from the ego, the bigger self, that the sense of self is very strong, you know. There's sometimes that you want to be perfect. I remember when I was a layperson, I used to be a perfectionist. I can't accept that I make even a small little mistake. I will go on and on beating myself up, you know, that because I'm not, I just, how silly you are. Why you make such a mistake? It's just a small mistake. But actually, small mistake, isn't it? Just, you know, but I can't even accept that, you know. But is it impossible, isn't it? That I create lots of suffering for myself, the ego, the sense of self, you know. That's like, because of, we attach to our own views, who we are. I remember many years ago, and I was still a trainee nun. Then once in a while, I call my family and, you know, to talk to my family and see what's happening in my family, you know. And of course, after the conversation with my family and the feedback with us, what's going on, and then I went back to my kuti. And that really, I feel really, you know, it's really bothered me, and I feel really disturbed. I feel very upset because I was quite upset with one of my siblings, and I was thinking, oh, she shouldn't have done this. It's wrong, not right. Why you do such a things, you know? Then go on and on for almost, you know, the night, you know, not the whole night, you know? Then suddenly I realized that, what are you doing? Why, you know, you got so, like, why you get so upset with that? Then actually I realized that, actually, I've been very, very selfish. Actually, I thinking that I love this person, I'm concerned about her, that's why I got upset. But actually, I'm not. To me, it's like my views that what is right and what is wrong is much more important than the person, isn't it? I realize that actually I attach to my own views that what is right, what is wrong, rather than thinking of, you know, looking at why, you know, why this person do that, why, you know, to try to understand her, to try to put myself, you know, onto the person's shoes, you know, that the kindness, if I truly love that person, you embrace, isn't it? You accept the person's shortcoming, isn't it? If you truly, then I tell myself, you really don't love her, you're so selfish. You know, if you really love your love her, you know, that you accept the person, you try to understand, isn't it? You try to understand where the person coming from, why the person doing it. But to me, it's like being right is much more important than being kind. Actually, I'm not being kind, you know. But at least, you know, afterwards I'd be able to see that. And sometimes how, you know, the sense of self, the ego, the views, you know, that we develop that is because we attach to our views, this is become part of me and mine. And then we think that we should know everything. So I remember a couple of years ago when I was in Malaysia, I was invited to conduct a temporary novitiate program. And then there we have they arranged me, the organizer, for a couple of public talks. Then she said, okay, maybe, you know, just the talks and no Q&A. And that try to avoid that I don't have to have Q&A so that I can avoid some tricky questions, you know. So in case I don't know, you know, I don't know how to answer, I told the person, I said, it's okay, let's have Q&A, I like Q&A. I said, it's okay. I said, if I don't know, I don't know, isn't it? I don't have all the answer for all the questions, isn't it? So I said, it's fine, you know. But sometimes if we think we know, actually we don't learn, isn't it? When we think we know, we close off, isn't it? We don't have to, we learn, we close off ourselves. But if we don't know, our mind is more open, isn't it? We open to things. If we think that we know everything, you know, then we close up ourselves and we don't learn. We really don't learn. And that's right. And nobody can teach you anything. And sometimes sometimes the ego is so big that we think that we're so smart. And then we try to outsmart others, you know. And then we think other people are so stupid because the person looks so quiet, you know, don't talk much. And we tend to underestimate and try to look down on others, isn't it? So, and it remind me of there was a proud, confidence, genius. So he makes a bet with an idiot. So he said to the idiot, "Hey, idiots," he said. "So I'm going to ask you a questions, you know. So I ask you the questions that if you don't know, you give me $5. So if you ask me questions, if I don't know the answer, so I give you 5,000. He was so proud because he thinks that he knows everything because he's so smart and he's so confident. So then he asked the idiot said, okay, I agree with that, okay. Then he asked the idiot, he said, how many continents in the world? Of course, the idiot don't know the answer. So he hand over $5 to the genius. Then he said, now me ask you the question. So what kind of animals with two legs sleep with three? Then the genius think and search, you know, what is the animals, you know, with two legs, you know, sleep with three? What kind of animals is it? He search and search. He eventually gave up. He couldn't give him the answer. Then he hands over 5,000. Then they say, okay, by the way, what is the answer of your questions? Then the idiot give him $5. Sometimes we think that we are so smart, isn't it? We think that we are outsmart, you know? And some people, they play dumb. They think that you think that they're stupid. They're not stupid, you know? And sometimes, you know, sometimes how, you know, our big ego sometimes really, you know, we really close ourselves off. We really cut ourselves off. Actually, we learn less, you know? And, you know, when we open-minded, you okay, we don't know. Because I remember many years ago, I went to one of these Dalai Lama talks. There's so many people there. I was really inspired, and someone asked him a question. I forgot what the person asked, but it stick in my mind for a long, long time, you know. I was very inspired. He, someone asked him the question, and he tell the person that he don't know. And I was very inspired for such, you know, he's such a well-known, you know. He said, I don't know. And I find that, wow, what a profound answer. I think it is really profound, you know. I was really inspired. Sometimes no need to be ashamed, you know. And, you know, there are lots of things that we don't know, isn't it? And wisdom is really boundless, unlimited. So, a lot of things we don't know. So, it's okay. But sometimes, like, sometimes when we think that we have to know everything, actually, we limit ourselves. And it's come from the sense of self, the ego, and we want to be better than anyone else, you know. I'm good, I'm better, you know. But, you know, and we not be able to really, when we see our deformities, not be able to accept that. I know for myself, when I first discovered that, I used to think that I'm such a kind and a peaceful, wonderful person. I remember many years ago when I was in Thailand. So then, I practice a lot of like solitude and seclusions by myself. I really enjoy, you know, that, and I'm so peaceful and so calm. And I was thinking that, wow, then I really, you know, thinking that my practice is really going so well, you know. But yeah, until someone turns up in the monastery, that person really pressed my button. Then I really know I was so annoyed and so agitated and so irritated, you know. Before that, I was thinking that I'm so peaceful. I was thinking that, oh, wow, gee, my practice is really good. I'm so peaceful. I remember there was a lady, she came from Malaysia. And the first day she came and she said, can I sleep with you in a kuti? I said, no way, I don't want to sleep with you. I said, go back, stay in your kuti. I don't want to sleep with you. And then she keep following me. No, I want to sleep with you. I want to stay with you. And we can discuss Dharma. So I said, no. Then I was really annoyed because she just keep following me like a shadow. I got so agitated and so irritated, you know. Then until I really said to him, I said, please stay away. I said, get lost. I said, you really crazy. I said, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to see your face, you know. But actually, the moment when I said that, I really know that I shouldn't have said that, you know. But because that time I was really quite agitated and irritated by, like, someone keep following me and asking me to share kuti with her. No way, you know, I can share kuti with someone that I don't even know. And she's very weird, talking all the nonsense, you know. and it's just very irritating. So then, the moment when I said that, I know that it's really unwholesome speech. I shouldn't have said that she's a crazy, you're mad, stay away, get lost, you know. And I regretted after that immediately when I said that. Then I said to myself, okay, look. From now onwards, I really restrain myself, no matter how agitated, how irritated. I'm not going to say anything. I restrain myself not to say anything. And I went back to my kuti. She even came to my kuti standing outside there calling me. I was meditating. I was so agitated, you know. And then she keep calling me and I ignore her. She said, wow, you're such a good meditator. Wow, you're in jhana. I was sitting inside there. I was fuming, you know. I was really fuming. And then next day when I see her, that takes me long time to calm down, you know. And long time, a lot of agitation and irritation. Then next day I see her, and then it takes me a long time, and then I feel really better, you know. And I calm down a lot, you know, and then feel better. And usually I be able to sit and focus on my breath very quickly, but now that time that I find it very difficult because I feel a lot of agitation and irritation. It's just so difficult. So the next day when I see her, again, I feel agitated and irritated. She'll come in front of me. If I do something, she come and push me away. I want to do this. So then I walk away to do other things. And she push me away. I want to do this, you know. And then she look at me, see whether I'm angry, you know. Then actually, then I just restrain, really fuming, you know, but I just restrain myself not to react, but she just want to make me angry. She just want me to react, you know. So I said, no, I'm not going to react. But it's very difficult. And then, what to do? Then I went back. Then I have to sit there and just be with that agitation and irritation. And I just sit with that feeling. Just sit with that. And until when I feel better, I start to reflect, you know, on the karma. Why I want to get upset with her, you know. And she's also have, like, mentally she's not really stable. And she also suffer. So I reflect on the karma. So if I got upset, I have to be responsible for my own karma. Why allow that person to control my happiness? Why I want to get upset? Then I reflect on that. And then I reflect on that, you know, try to put myself on the other person's shoes, you know, to develop the compassion. Actually, it's really helped to soften my heart a little bit. That is to soften now a lot. Then I started to feel like, oh yes, you know, then I forgive her, try to forgive her. So, you know, then I keep doing that, and then I forgive her and try to send metta to her, develop loving kindness towards her. And because of that, and she really made me to work with my defilements, you know, because of that experience. And because of that, you know, I keep doing that every day, you know. And actually she stayed there for about 10 days. I remember because of, she's not only disturbed me, because she disturbed others lady as well, but I just keep quiet. I didn't complain about her. I didn't go to the airport and tell what happening to her. I just keep quiet. I just restrain myself and keep practicing, you know. And then I was thinking, wow, she's giving me the opportunities to practice forgiveness, kindness and compassion, you know. So I just see it in that way, you know. And after 10 days, and she was asked to leave because she created lots of disruption to others. And actually, when she turned around, when she left, I feel so sorry for her. I had no anger at all that moment. And when I learned to forgive, learn to develop experience, you always experience, you know, I'm empathetic. You know, it's unpleasant. And then how we identify experience as good or bad? Because if it's unpleasant, then it's bad. No, not necessarily that it's unpleasant. Experience, not necessarily that it's bad, you know. But every experience is a learning experience. Every experience that really make me grow, learn and grow. And it's really helped me with that experience. You know, sometimes like pleasant feelings, you know, that like defilements, craving, you know, being greedy, you know, of, you know, especially with nice things, you know, greed arouses, isn't it? We want more. And when we're feeding our defilements, you know, when we have craving, we're greedy, you know, being greedy. And it's not necessary that it's really good thing, isn't it? Sometimes pleasant experience is not necessary good thing. So that's why when I look back, I'm really grateful for this person, this experience, that because actually it's made me learn. Because a wise person is not a person that you never make mistakes. But we be able to learn from our mistake, you know. Then we be able to forgive. So I'm really grateful that, you know, that because of that, I learned how to forgive. I learned how to let go, how to accept, how to embrace that person. You know, and this is how that, you know, that we actually identify our experience as me and mine. This is my. We not be able to accept when things that is not go our way. isn't it? It's something not, you go against, you know, like things that we plan, we want to go, it's, you know, we expect things to be, and then things don't turn out the way we want it to be, we got upset because we want things happen according to our way, our ideas, our views, our how things should be. When things don't happen, turns up the way we want it to be, we got upset. We got that reaction. It's impossible, isn't it? We cannot always have, you know, pleasant feelings. That is part of life, you know. Because if we want to always have pleasant feeling, no one in this world that happy all the time. Sometimes yes, you feel a bit grumpy, you feel a bit like down, maybe you feel a bit depressed. You know, grumpy is just being grumpy, depressive. But we don't accept that. We think that it's wrong. We shouldn't feel that way. We should feel happy all the time. I remember once I was talking about like sometimes being grumpy is okay, being grumpy. And I remember someone there, she told me that, oh, I was so happy because that day I was so grumpy. Then when you said that it's okay to be grumpy, immediately my grumpiness gone, she said. When she tells her, oh yes, it's okay to be grumpy. Because we are fighting, we're not accepting, we think that we shouldn't feel that way. So that's why sometimes we think that being depressed is a problem. Being depressed is not a problem. Being grumpy is not a problem. We feel sad is not a problem. Because sadness comes, sadness go. Things won't stay, isn't it? Even happy, you know, pleasant feeling, even such a wonderful feelings, you think they can stay forever. It won't stay. So at the end of the day, it doesn't make any difference, isn't it? But how much we identify ourselves, isn't it, with the experience. So when we depress this moment, we feel grumpy this moment, we think that we should depress for the rest of our life. And we ourselves, we send ourselves to life imprisonment that we have to live up to that. I have to be grumpy. I should live up to my own expectation that I should feel depressed. Actually, depressed is not a problem. But a lot of people think that depression is a problem and that they try to get rid of depression. We don't have to get rid of depression. You leave it alone, it will go away. It subsides. Things arises, it's passed away. This is the nature of all things because we don't understand. We think that we'll be able to control. We think that we'll be able to get rid of things that we don't like and hold on to things that we like. No, we can't hold on to anything. You know, even we can't get rid of things. We get rid of things, actually, it's still craving. Craving not to be, and you still crave. You know, then sometimes we think that we'll be able to control. So it's okay, because we don't understand this is part of life, part of existence. You know, no one that happy all the time. So yeah, sometimes you feel a bit sad. Okay, this is how I feel sad. So the sad, will pass. It won't stay there. But the harder you try to get rid of the sadness, the harder you try to get rid of the depression, the harder you try to get rid of the grumpiness, I tell you, you feel worse, you know. It's getting stronger. It's just like you reinforce that tendency. It becomes stronger. So because we not be able to accept that, you know, we fight, you know. So you allow acceptance actually means letting go. We allow things be. We allow ourselves to be. We allow ourselves that we are not perfect. It's fine that we are not perfect. If we are perfect, we are not here. It's okay that we still have big ego. If we don't have ego, we are not here. So because we take it personally, we think that's only me. You know, I shouldn't have this. We think that it's bad. We identify ourselves, you know. Because when we come to a place of acceptance, that is letting go. That is being kind. I remember someone said, oh, you said that you not accept yourself. Then I should accept myself as a failure. You as a failure, you know. Yes, I fail this time. Sometimes you understand the most. You know, sometimes we only contribute when we some parts that we can't control, isn't it? Some of the factors that is beyond our control. For example, you know, if we want to plant something on our land, so we went on the website, we checked, you know, what are the suitable plants, you know, whether that is suitable for this climate, you know. We do all whatever, you know. We do all the right things, you know. We put in fertilizer, we do everything with the right thing, you know, doing all the right thing. And we water the plant and we do everything right. But one day, there's a storm and damage the plants. That is beyond our control, isn't it? Can you say that you are a failure? No. You know, some of the things that, yes, we can control, some of the things we can't control, isn't it? And sometimes our decision making is only, sometimes when things goes the way we want it to be, we think that we make the right decision. When things don't turn out, we think that we make the wrong decision. Actually, no, there's no right or wrong decision. It's just that when things come together, all the factors come together, all the conditions come together, it's happened. Then, but sometimes when things not come together, things don't happen. Because you have to have all the factors come together. Our decision is only part of the whole thing. So, and then our effort to put in to try to make it happen is also only part of the whole thing. So we only part of that, you know. So, and we can control part. Other part we cannot control. So then yes, you know, and this time we fail. It's only that it's yet, you know. Then we try again. And then we try to see, you know, we investigate, you know, why things doesn't work out, you know. We can only do our best, you know, and try to, you know, if we make mistake, to be learn from it. Don't say, next time, we try not to repeat the same thing. But most people, they don't learn. And they repeat the same thing, and then they expect to have a different result. So people focus on results. They don't look at the causes, you know. What leading up to that? I remember recently someone said to me, with problems with her personal problems, you know, and then complaining that her good friend, how much she care for her and things like that. And also sometimes like we have like wife complaining the husband that, you know, that, oh, you know, he's not doing anything. I have to serve him like anything. I'm like a servant, you know, I have to do everything, you know. Then I ask her, have you ever investigated and ask yourself, have you contributed to that? Have you spoiled him? I say, you used to do that all the time. Once you don't do it, you can't, isn't it? And then sometimes like they're complaining about, then I ask them, is it your or your husband or your wife? So when you know that person, is it that the person is already like that? Do you know that this person shortcoming? Say yes. But I said, you already know that person. So if you truly love the person, You accept the person, isn't it? You embrace the person's shortcoming, isn't it? But never ever, especially those who want to get married, don't ever think that you're going to change your husband or wife, your partner, to try to shape them the way you want it to be. Don't try to change them. You can't. You know? Don't think that you think that you have the power, you'll be able to do that. No. You try to shape them and try to change them the way you want them to be. No, you can't do that, you know. But a lot of people think that. I said, you already knew that person is like that. But because of that, they have this wishful thinking that, you know, somehow, through my power, I'll be able to change. We can't even change ourselves, isn't it? A lot of old habits, you know, die hard, so difficult to change. And then we think that we can change others. You can't. It's just like we have so many nuns in our monastery. I don't, you know. I just accept they are. Different people have different defilements. It's just different, isn't it? We're just different. So I just accept the way they are, you know. So individually, like Jyotika here. So Jyotika's being Wampat Jyotika. She just does what Wampat Jyotika does, isn't it? So this nun just does what this nun does. This person does what this person does. So no problem, isn't it? But if you think that, if just imagine, I try to shape every nuns, you know, oh, my ideal nuns, everybody has to behave the same way. It's not like you like a mole, you know, then like replicate, you know, everybody looks the same. So how boring life, isn't it? Everybody looks the same, isn't it? So sometimes they have diversities that make life much interesting, you know. So that's okay. If you truly love that person, you love the person as the person is. You're not trying to change that person. We can't change the other person. We can only change ourselves to embrace, to accept that person. You know, that's why when whoever want to get married, you know, don't ever think that to try to change your husband or wife, you know, after marriage, then I can train them, you know, the perfect husband or perfect wife, you know. Don't try to, you can't train. Even someone asked me, how do you train your nun? I said, I can't train my nun. I never train my nun. They come into the monastery, they train themselves. Isn't it? I said, they train themselves, I can't train them. All I have to do is to provide, you know, the opportunities to give them the support, to give them the encouragement, to try to support them, to try to help them. But I can't train them, isn't it? It's difficult enough to train myself, you know. How am I going to train others, you know? So all we need to, I can only provide, you know, the opportunities, the support, the encouragement. We can't change, you know. And that's why this is how we, you know, I have all this, you know, sometimes like, after being a nun, and then we used to have, even we have supporters like married 30, 40 years, they ended up divorced. Can't stand each other, especially after that they retired, because they're 24/7 together, they really can't stand each other. That's why we have someone when they separated, oh, I love my husband so much, oh, I cannot live without him. I said, if you are going to 24/7 with your husband, I can guarantee you, you don't want to live with him 24/7. Isn't it? You can't stand each other, you know. And actually, this reminds me of, there was a couple that on the way to marry, they're going to get married. And then they met an accident and they died. They passed away, they died, and they reborn in the heaven. And then they was waiting at the pearly gate and waiting for St. Peter. Then two of them said, oh, I don't know whether, can we get married in the heaven? In the heaven, you know, don't know whether we still can get married, because they are birthed again to get married, they die, you know, they're reborn in heaven. Then when St. Peter's come, then they ask St. Peter's, can we still get married? He said, okay, we haven't had case like you. This is the first time we met, you know, something like that, a situation like this. Let me find out. So he went away, and they waited and waited. 1 month gone past, and 2 months gone past. And then they started to say, what happened if our relationship doesn't work out? Can we divorce? Then after 3 months, the St. Peter came back and tells them, yes, now you can marry in the heaven, you can marry here. So, but now we have a question, you know, we have to ask you, can we divorce? And the St. Peter was a face so red, and he was so angry, he threw the clipboard onto the ground. He said, come on, he said, it takes me 3 months to find a priest come up here. Do you have any ideas how long it takes me to find a lawyer? This is how, isn't it? Haven't married, we think of divorce already, isn't it? And this is how our mind always go into the future. Always worrying about things is not going to work out, isn't it? And this is sometimes like this is how we don't stay in present moment awareness. We just always wander off in the future, go on and on and on. And that's why it's important that that be able to look at our certain habitual patterns, because it's come from our conditioning, and we develop into certain habitual pattern. And is this habitual pattern is like an addiction. It's very difficult to work with, because it's because sometimes we don't even know that we are doing it, because we just like automatic pilot, you know, we just follow our habitual pattern without knowing, because it's just a conditioning. So I remember someone asked me a question just recently. He said, oh, recently one monk said to me that, you know, everything is conditioned, there is no will, you know. So how am I going to change? How can I make my own choice? I said, no, you don't, I told him. Unless you be able to see that. Unless you be able to see your certain habitual pattern, your underlying tendency, isn't it? If you don't know, you don't even know that you're doing it, how are you going to change yourself? I said, you will not be able to make that choice unless you see it, isn't it? I said, in order to see that, you have to develop the clarity. When your mind is peaceful, when your mind is still, when you have the clarity, you'll be able to see all your subtle defilements. You have certain habitual pattern, you have certain tendency. Because this is very subtle. You can't see it unless you have the clarity. You know, the clarity comes from stillness. So how to develop the stillness? You have to develop the stillness throughout the whole day. So you try to practice, apply, you know, to practice present moment awareness in your daily life, day-to-day life, you know, and try to apply, you know, this the practice of moment-to-moment awareness in your daily life. Whatever you do, try to be present. Try to be this, you know, when you're eating, so you're fully here, enjoying your food, then you're eating. But most people, while they're eating, they're thinking of washing up. So while they're washing up, they're planning for the next meal, isn't it? So when we never stay in present, you know, because actually, if you be able to stay in present moment, awareness actually itself is really blissful and lots of joy, because you'll be able to enjoy much more, isn't it, if you stay, you know, like if by example, if even you have the most delicious food, so if while you're eating you're planning something else, then actually you miss out a lot, isn't it? You'll not be able to enjoy that delicious food, you know. So you start planning. So never stay in that moment. Your mind keep looking for something else. So we always thinking that our happiness eventually will come. You know, we hope that, you know, our happiness, we are not content with these moments. We always thinking, looking, you know, looking forward, leaning towards that, to the future. There's more to come. Eventually, I'll be happy. So if you keep, you know, running away from present moment awareness, you keep looking forward, thinking that there's more things to come, until the day you rest in peace, you can't even find a moment of peace. So you don't have to wait for the happiness to come in the future, your happiness in this moment. So I remember someone said to me, how to live in present moment awareness? I have to plan, I have to work. So I said, what's wrong with, you know, living present in the present moment awareness, and it doesn't, you know, interfere with your planning. I said, you can plan. You can just, you know, fully hear to your planning. But the problem is, we always try to control. We worry about things doesn't work out, isn't it? So I said, you can plan, you leave it alone, isn't it? So I said, you have to do some planning. I mean, for example, if you want to plan to go to Thailand or wherever you want to go, and you cannot just say that, oh, I live in present moment awareness, I just turns up at the airport. You can't do that. And this is how people like, when they listen to the Dharma, sometimes they take it the other way around, you know, take it the wrong way. You know, then they ended up, oh, I don't do anything then. I because I'm living present moment awareness, I shouldn't work, I shouldn't plan. No, whenever you at this moment, when you work, when you eat, you make sure that you eat, isn't it? When you're washing your dishes, you're washing dishes, you're fully here. You're fully here. When you're doing planning, you're fully here planning. Then you leave it alone. But how many people that be able to do that? You know, they won't leave it alone, you know, they won't. You know, they will start thinking, if plan A doesn't work out, I plan P. Plan B doesn't work out, plan C. Then they will start from plan A to plan Z. So that they have to make sure that things, you know, don't go wrong. You can't do that, isn't it? So we can plan. Then we leave it alone. We can only deal with it as things happen, isn't it? So we don't even know what is going to happen next. You know, son, this is how the negativity towards future, we just so worry about things is going, not going to, you know, work out, you know. And then we try to control, we cannot control, you know. So that's why if we are really concerned, we care for our future, your future is lies within this moment. So if you are happy in this moment, you are more likely happy in next moment. So you don't have to wait for your happiness to come in the future. Your happiness lies in this moment. So bring your mind back to this moment and enjoy. You know? So sometimes people think that it's so very difficult. I said, it's not difficult. I said, do you have few moments a day? Yes. I said, is it difficult? I said, do you have one moment? Bring your mind back to this moment. At ease and at peace with this moment, one moment. He said, oh yeah, I can do that. So at least, I said, you have one moment, you know, isn't it? Rather than you don't even have a moment of peace in your life, you know. If you have a few moments, at least you have a few moments peace and happiness in one day, you know. Rather than you keep searching, we think that our happiness eventually will come. So because they do that to develop that present moment awareness, it's helped to strengthen our mindfulness. And it's helped to develop the stillness. That's why we need to sit in meditation to develop the calmness that strengthens our mind. A lot of people think that, oh, I only do there to be just mindful. The mindfulness is not the kind of mindful, you know. I'm lifting. I'm seeing, I'm thinking, not that kind of that. It's not really mindfulness. You know, I remember someone told me that she saw someone doing really so mindful. So mindful, you know, lifting up the leg, walk, and put the foot down, and walk very slowly, you know, so mindful, and then grab a cup, and taking the cup, and go and get some water, you know, and slowly, you know, open the tap and put the water into the mugs, you know, and very slowly, you know, so mindful, you know, taking, you know, and then want to drink the cup of water. And then he realized that this is not his mug. Actually, it's not this kind. You think that you're mindful. It's not mindful, isn't it? You're not knowing. So it's not this kind of mindfulness, you know. So people think that this is mindfulness. Not that, you know. Actually, this is more like concentration, you know, concentrated, you know. No, actually, samadhi is stillness, when your mind becomes still. Everything still. Then you can see a bigger picture. So it's not concentric. For example, if I concentrate only you, I can only see you. Isn't it? I don't see the rest. There are other people there. But it's the stillness when your mind becomes still. You have more clarity. You can see what other things here very clear. So that's why it's important that develop the stillness. So day-to-day mindfulness, moment-to-moment awareness, this help to strengthen, to develop a stillness. As the stillness develop, and this helps you in your daily life to strengthen your mindfulness. And as this goes up, this will go. And this goes up, this go. And it's all together, hand in hand together. practice together. So you cannot say that. Some people say, okay, they think that my practice is only sitting on the cushion. So that's it, you know. And then the whole day, they just live, they're so mindless, they're just things everywhere, you know, and they're not mindful. And then they think that they sit on the cushion, then they can just peaceful, and then they use willpower, try to focus. You can't do that. You see, that the whole day, you know, you develop the mindfulness, you carry that over to your cushion and keeping your precept. So how you live your life is important. You have to develop certain qualities to support your meditation. There's some spiritual qualities, you know, keeping the precept, being a virtuous person, morality. And, you know, it's just imagine that, you know, if you are a loving and kind person, you know, how you live your life is important. Then when you sit, it's easier. You can become peaceful easily. Then as your mind becomes, you know, you become very peaceful and calm. When you're out there, your mindfulness is stronger. You'll be able to observe yourself. You'll be able to pick up, isn't it? How you react. You'll be able to see that your own reaction. You don't react, you know, like you don't react impulsively without thinking, because we are so good at it, isn't it? We just keep doing the same thing. Sometimes we keep doing the same thing, we think that we are mindful, actually we are not mindful. It's just like we used to do it, you know. And sometimes we forget, did I do that? Did I put it back? No. But actually we did, because out of habit, you know. But we are not really actually mindful. So that's why it's important, everyday life. It's not only on the cushion how you live your life. How your attitude is important. So that's why, don't make till your happiness come in the future. Your happiness in right now, in this moment. So that this is how you live your life. Life is really precious. Don't waste your life. Sometimes, yes, we need to work. We need to, you know, earn our living, you know. That, yes. But also not to forget, you know, to spend some time, you know. Because sometimes we do not need to have a lot in order to be happy, isn't it? You know, and sometimes how people spend so much time just thinking that, you know, I work so hard so I can get this, I can get that, you know. So my children have all the branded expensive things. We do not need that, you know. We can live simply and be happy. And don't, you know, that, and it's very precious, life is very precious. They have the opportunities to be born as a human being and the opportunities to listen to the Dharma and to able to practice. And don't, you know, the opportunity is there. So don't just busy with your life. Take some time off, you know, to do some, try to meditate every day. Get up a little bit early in the morning, at least do half an hour. Come back at least before go to bed, do half an hour, and try to be mindful, you know, practice mindfulness throughout your day. Then you feel that you're so rich, you know, you live your life so full. Then it's not just busy, 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 you know. Then you, at the end of the day, you know, 50 years gone past, 70 years gone past, isn't it? So, okay. So this is the last story, then the end of the tonight talk. So, when God created a donkey, so he said to the donkey, okay, now you're a donkey, so you will carry all the bags, heavy bags, you will work tirelessly from sun up to sun down, you carry all the heavy bags, and you have no intelligence, so you live as a donkey for 50 years, so as a donkey. Then the donkey said to God, he said, no, 50 years is too long. I want only 20 years as a donkey. So, okay, God said, okay, you have 20 years. Then God created dog. So he said, okay, now you are a dog. So you look after man's house and be the best friend. Do to eat what they give, you know, to eat whatever they give you. So you live as a dog, you know, for 25 years. And the dog said, 25 years is too long, I only want 10 years. So, then after that, God creates a monkey. So he said, okay, now you're a monkey, you are jumping up and down, you know, and do silly things and amuse others, you know. Then, so you live as a monkey for 20 years. So the monkey said, 20 years is too long, I want only 10 years is enough. And after that, the last, God created man. So he said, now you are man. So you are the only rational being in the world. And you will control other animals, you will dominate other animals. And you live as a man for 20 years. And the man said, 20 years is too short. Why not you give me 30 years that the donkey refused? The 15 years that the dog did not want? And the 10 years that the monkey refused? So then God said, okay, you know. Then since then, men live 20 years as a man. So when they go into the adulthood, so they live 30 years like a donkey, carry all the heavy bags, you know, and as a donkey. Then after, when the children grows up, you know, so they live 15 years like the dog, you know, looking after the house and eat what is being given, you know. And then 10 years, you know, like a monkey, you know, from house to house, you know, and amusing their grandchildren. Doing silly things. So sometimes you look back, isn't it? How many people live their life like that, isn't it? It's really, you know. So that's, thank you for listening. So I offer this for Dharma reflection. May this teaching benefit to all of you. Oh, where is this? Is it here? Okay. Leona from USA. How can we overcome the idea that we can fulfill our desires through anger and negative reaction to a situation? Okay. So to overcome the desires, how can we overcome the idea that we can fulfill our desires through anger and negative reactions? So we cannot fulfill our desires, and because, no, this is, yes, it's come from the desires, because whenever we can't get what we want, anger, isn't it? That's right. So that's why when we fulfill our desires, you know, then we have greed, we want more, isn't it? Who will, you know, whenever we have craving. So when we start feeding our craving, it's just like you're putting in fuel. So it will burn more, isn't it? The craving will grow. You can never fulfill we will never fulfill our desires, isn't it? We want more and more. So it's just like drinking salty water, you get thirsty, you want more, you know. And then also because of that, you know, and whenever we can't get what we want, we got upset, isn't it? That's why we have anger. And we have this negative reaction, you know. So that's why, that to overcome that, that's why you have to develop the opposite. To restrain ourselves, not to feed our desires, our craving. But it's not easy unless you be able to see that. Just like just now what I've said, that you'll not be able to overcome that if you'll not be able to see your own defilements, your desires. Because most of the time, we just act like automatic pilot. When our desires, you know, when we have craving, we just want something, we want to get something, we crave for it, we want to get what we want, you know, then we can't get what we want, we got upset. Then when we have that reaction, actually we are feeding. It's just like we're putting on more fuel and then the fire becomes bigger and bigger, and then eventually out of control. So unless you be able to develop that clarity, then only we'll be able to overcome anger, you know, to overcome that desires, you know. But of course, it's not easy. So that's right, we are very fortunate. We have the whole path of practice. We have this instant, you know, the three in one. That is morality, cultivation of the mind, and wisdom. Develop the wisdom. So that's right, we have to develop, you know, we have to restrain ourselves by keeping the precept. Because when keeping the precept, you know, we practicing non-violent and restraining our mind, non-violent and non-harming. So that's because of that affect our mind. We become, you know, because it's when we have done something that is, we feel that is not really right, you know, and it's undermine our peace. So that's why you have to keep the precept to restrain ourselves, not to feed that. So that's that. And then also to cultivation the mind, to practice mindfulness, stillness, and have to put in effort to restrain our unwholesome thoughts, our unwholesome emotions, you know. And with that, with the cultivation of the mind, when your mind becomes really still and peaceful, that's where you develop, that's where wisdom arises. So you have to take up the whole path of practice that is the noble four path. So in order to overcome that, you have to take up the whole path of practice. There's the noble four path, that is morality, cultivation of the mind, develop wisdom. So there's no shortcut. There's already shortcut 3-in-1, okay? So Ishura from Victoria, Australia. I'm 11 and I live in Australia. When I was meditating, I drift off. In it, could not feel my body. I did not know where I was. I did not know how I was. What happened? So sometimes that... That kind of drift off, that when your mind become very peaceful, and as your mindfulness is not strong enough, then you have the kind of, actually it's quite pleasant, you know, but your mind is not really bright, you know, you're a bit, you know, like it's quite pleasant, because as your breath become very subtle, more and more subtle. And then, and your mindfulness is not strong enough, then you like drifting off. But it's just a half sleep, you know, that kind of in that kind of a state of mind. And actually, sometimes that you just all you need to do is that you just make your breath become a little bit coarser, because the mindfulness is not strong enough to be able to go with the breath, then you feel like a bit dull, you know, a bit like, you know, you just drift off like that. So that's why sometimes like the mind is not bright. So then, yes, actually, it's just that your mind become peaceful, and in the state that your mindfulness is not strong enough, that you can't really go deeper, you know, that kind of state, you know. It's not really bright, but it's just a half sleep, you know. Like sometimes I think most of you experienced that before, it's just drip off. And actually it's quite pleasant, isn't it? But actually it's not really good, because you will not go deep. Because your mindfulness is not strong enough, you will not go deep. You just like, you know, half asleep, you know, like you just drip off. But it's quite pleasant. But actually, it's not really good, because the mind will not really go deep. So I encourage that to go back to the coarser breath to make, but not too hard. Just try to bring your mind back to the breath and just make the breath a little bit coarser, but not too hard. When too hard, then, you know, then very difficult your mind to become peaceful again. Then you get, you know, so you just a little bit, make the breath a little bit coarser, and then you continue with the mindfulness and just on the breath again. Still from Malaysia, what should be the purpose of life of practicing Buddhist? So the purpose of life practicing Buddhist is to search for peace, calm. This is what we are searching for, isn't it? I'm sure all of you here, why you are here? So you're searching for the peace, isn't it? For the inner happiness, for the peace, the calm. So any questions or comments? Oh, yes.
Ajahn Hasapana, thanks for the wonderful, wonderful, wonderful deep talk.
Okay.
Yeah, I like to say, you know, like, when things don't come my way, apart from what you mentioned, you know, okay, it's our mind that creates this, creates anxiety. Mm-hmm. I always recall the Buddha's saying, you know, in the Dhammapada, patience, tolerance, and understanding are the highest virtues. I use this to calm myself down. You know, it's unpleasant. It's from our mind that creates that anxiety. You have to realize this thing. And then what comes to me is, you're saying stillness. I practice, patience, 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 tolerance, 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 understanding the other person, you know, all these things. Then I calm down myself. Once it's calmed down, the problem is gone.
Yeah, because things comes and go. Whatever, you know, whatever things arises is passed away by itself.
Actually,
we don't have to do anything, but it's very difficult not to do anything. We always like to interfere. Because we've been conditioned that when, you know, we try to do something, you know. But actually, it's very easy. It's very simple. Actually, the practice is very simple. Do anything. But don't do anything is the hardest thing to do.
And the anxiety is from our creation, you know.
Yeah.
You know, when it doesn't come right, this thing, we feel not right, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's from our minds, isn't it?
Yeah.
Our mind creates this anxiety. We don't realize it's our mind, you know. Once we calm down, you know, to, you know, that thing, and then, well, when you calm down, then you can see the situation more properly. You see, it's us creating that. Don't blame the other person.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you for your talk.
Thank you. So anything, any questions, any comments, any questions? No? Okay. Going, gone. Okay. So thank you for listening. Good night.